Guess what? Potions and Potpourri! We are a D&D podcast where we have different kinds of segments. We just talk about D&D in general. We sometimes have guests who we interview and discuss D&D or just tabletop RPG-related things. We also have a potion segment where we just do things on the fly. And we also do live plays. This is Keisha.
This is Kayla.
And welcome again, everybody. So, to start off, Kayla, what are some songs that you know by heart? Like, you could sing the whole thing. Oh, wow.
I'm making a face. My go-to karaoke song is 1984 by Bowling for Soup.
All right, yes.
1985? Fuck. I don't even know all the words.
I don't either. But I know what you're talking about, though.
God, I'm going to, like, listen to this episode after we record it and, like, scream at myself for not mentioning, like, any of my favorite songs.
I know, On the Spot is the worst. Well, I'll say a couple if you want to think about it. Okay, so In the End by Linkin Park.
Yep.
And Numb by Linkin Park. And Faint by Linkin Park.
Just all of Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park.
Basically, I guess Meteora too.
Meteora, yeah.
A lot of Backstreet Boys songs I can do by heart for sure.
Yep.
There's a lot of Britney Spears that I can mostly do. Gosh, now that I'm trying to think outside of those, though.
Just 90s pop.
I know, yeah. Oh. It's just, like, classic.
All-Star by Smash Mouth.
Oh my god, All-Star!
For sure.
I don't know all the lyrics, but I definitely know that song.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Hey Ya by Outkast.
Hey Ya, okay.
That one's pretty good. I mean, like, pretty much every Tool song, I know all the words, too.
Nice.
So... But I don't know, that's not cool.
Oh, the Mario Kart love song.
What the fuck is that?
Oh my god, I don't know who sings it. But I know the title. It's so cute. I'll have to play it for you sometime.
Other people will know it. They'll be excited.
I hope so. If you don't know Mario Kart love song, look it up. It's so cute. I love it. Oh, I guess I know Jessie's Girl too, pretty well.
Yeah, that song sucks.
Because I used to date someone named Jesse.
Yeah. Like, I'm Jesse's girl.
Yeah. And I was like, I wonder how many people are told that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We got a few.
Yeah, we named some of them. I'm sure I'll be the same when we listen to it. Like, why didn't you mention da-da-da?
Yeah, exactly.
You fool.
Yeah.
Well, that was a quick question. But hey guys, welcome. You're here for D&D. You learned a little bit about us just now. Hopefully that was entertaining and not super sad.
Keisha, Linkin Park. Also Linkin Park. Linkin Park.
Did I mention Linkin Park?
Maybe some Backstreet Boys.
And those are only from two albums. There's so many more. I really like Linkin Park. I love you, Chester. So we are continuing our homebrew series right now. This is the third episode of our Rift campaign discussion. So if you haven't listened to the other two, I highly recommend it. You might get confused.
Yeah.
We won't really do much of a recap. It's just basically the first episode was the start of it and the plot. The second one was getting a little bit deeper into, like, specific characters, or rather NPCs that we met, and some of the major events and mechanics that were introduced, as well as a few things that changed because of the characters and not because of the DM. I'm planning any of that. So we're just continuing that. This one, we're going to do more of a, like, memorable moments in the campaign.
Yeah.
While also dabbling in the story, of course, too, but there were definitely some missions or sessions in particular that stood out to us.
Definitely.
Especially so.
And there's kind of, like, you know, there was major arcs,
yeah,
that got us to where we are now, mm-hmm, that really shaped everything for us.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to start off with that,
well,
you super remember?
We can start with, like, a question.
Okay.
Did you have something personal in mind for each of the characters to experience throughout the story? Like, did you have a plan to have that happen?
I did. Well, I didn't start with a plan, but I wanted to have plans for each character.
Yeah. So everybody had a stake.
Yes. I wanted it to be different and unique and personalized to each of you guys. So, like, when we first started playing the campaign, while you guys were in the Rift, that was also me kind of, like, feeling out what your characters are like and how they might react to certain things, what might drive that character, things like that. So it was kind of like a test run for me of like, all right, how do I develop these people? What are they even, what am I starting with? What are you guys even doing? Like, what do you like? And how do I make you go further, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, while we were playing, I slowly, piece by piece, person by person, try to figure out, like, why are you important? Why does your character matter in this grand scheme of things instead of you just being another ant, you know, crawling around trying not to get crushed? So that's basically what I was trying to do. And, like, in some ways, you guys kind of did it yourselves, like, with your connection to Mistra. There was a lot of that you did yourself. I threw in a couple of things in there that you probably didn't expect. Regarding, like, your connections with her and her connections with other very important characters, too, and how that ties you into the ultimate story. Like, our Loxodon character, whose name is Red Wool, as we discussed last time, he made himself a QNOT member.
Yep.
So that kind of became its own thing that he kind of wrote for himself, you know, and the two halflings, they started out with their own story of just seeking freedom. And eventually one of them became a father, and that became huge in his life.
Yes.
And the other one is more seeking redemption slash trying to cope with an alien presence in his mind, basically. And just dealing with, like, a personal crisis of, like, who is he really? Like, what is his purpose, you know? Apart from that other mind that melded with his, we have Buff Vanderhuge, such a great name. We always have to say it. He also kind of made his own way too of how he is important with the Rift and how the Rift is in a way kind of trying to make him like its champion, you know?
Yeah. The face of the Rift.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you should be like the king, you know, I want you to rule over everything when I take over, you know,
right,
type of a deal. So yeah, I definitely, that's always important to me in any campaign that I personally run. I want each character to have their own reason for being there, for driving the story forward and, like, feeling important, you know, instead of just another person that's just kind of stumbling around these dungeons or something.
Right. We need a reason to make the choices that we make and to, like, be involved. And that's another reason why we were never on the same page about some of this stuff, because we all had, like, a personal gain with some of the decisions being made. So something I decided to do with my character kind of early on, I was probably, like, level 5 sorcerer. I decided to start taking levels in Paladin.
Right.
Because if we'd been playing our characters and some major events had happened, and with my backstory developing as we went, I kind of realized, you know, my whole drive is to bring this goddess back. And, you know, all my power comes from her, and, you know, she's basically like my rock. And, so I started taking levels of Paladin and became much more of a champion and kind of leaned into that, like, godly knight role that I had set up for myself.
And that really fits your character.
Yeah.
Because initially, just, like, it was fun with the sorcerer, like, the wild magic stuff, but it didn't quite fit. But it made sense because your character didn't really know, like, who she was or what she was doing until she kind of figured it out and went down the Paladin path.
Exactly.
And that was a pretty big turning point, I feel like, for your character.
Yeah, and it just made more sense because I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a mistress champion, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I have... And it kind of, like, drove me even harder and, like, really, like, pinpointed my focus a lot more that way.
Right.
And then our warlock also started taking Paladin levels, but he was going a completely different direction with it. And that's Buff Vanderhuge, the face of the Rift.
Yeah.
And he was taking his magic in more of a warlock way,
you
know, and being a Paladin. So it's been really interesting. We're kind of, like, both multi-class Paladin magical users that are on completely opposite ends of the spectrum of each other.
That's always been interesting.
That both have Rift magic. So, yeah, that has been interesting.
Yeah, I really like that decision when you decided to go into Paladin, especially since it made you a lot less squishy.
Yeah, definitely. I know. That's mostly why I did it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, I've got all these AoE spells and we got like three tanks, so. But yeah, you know, we started talking in the last episode kind of about how we got out of the rift and meeting the Q'na and how that was like one of the pivotal choices in determining which direction the story was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was like kind of one of the first, like forming the Q'na, meeting them, that kind of swayed our opinion dramatically over the rest of the story and the history. But then there was quite a few other things. We already talked about Merilith, but I did write that down too. Like that was a pretty big deal.
Yep.
Meeting a demigod and befriending her, basically. Yes. And then eventually winning her to our side. Kind of towards the end of the story, I'm not going to talk about it too much because we'll talk about it another episode, but we had to start making allies officially. So that way when we would fight this final battle, we would know which side everybody stood on.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to start theoretically drawing lines in the sand across everybody that we had met.
Right.
You know, like, are you going to fight for us or against us was basically the only choice.
Mm-hmm.
So having her as an ally was huge.
Yeah, it was.
For us coming into this big battle. What do you think are some other like major events that really like propelled the story forward for us?
So let's see. Most of the ones that I think of are honestly ones that were very personal to a player. So for example, talking about the halflings in the group right now, one of the halflings, he's the rogue. His name is Crixus, and his character to me always felt like he was kind of lost.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like, you know what? Like, I had a pretty rough life and I just want to escape it and don't really know what to do with that, though, you know? And early on, I think it was pretty shortly after you left the rift, one of my most memorable battle scenes. So the party split up and one of the members, one of the halflings, got caught up in a battle with a rift badger.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself was a pretty epic battle because,
yeah,
like, again, the party was split. So the danger was pretty high. Like the fact that these guys might seriously die from these things because they're meant for the full party, not half the party. But they got super creative with it. And that halfling ended up killing that badger and went down a whole path, which I'll get to next. But during that time, Crixus and his group went out, and for a while it seemed like nothing was happening on that side. Like, oh, like there's nothing here, we're not finding much. And eventually they encounter another halfling. And immediately, of course, Crixus is being very kind to him, like, hey, are you okay? You know, we're here to help. And once they got close enough, it triggered the trap where there were hunters that appeared. They were hidden the whole time. Nobody thought to look for it. They were completely like not really paying attention. They were unaware and they got attacked. One of the hunters is a princess, was a princess, under the Empress Eloria, who is the queen of the elves. And
the ruler of the Elendi.
Yes. She's mm-hmm. basically like the ruler. They say that there's like a council and it's split between the humans, the dwarves, and the elves. But everybody really knows it's Eloria running the show.
Yes.
And everyone submits to her. And she has many children, many daughters who are all being raised to potentially become the new empress. So one of them, her name is Visella, is a hunter, and she hunts those who have escaped their servitude, you know, and she's just cruel and twisted at heart. And she's very much inspired by who's the guy that runs the Saw movies, Jigsaw?
Oh, okay.
Jigsaw.
Yeah. I don't remember what his real name is, but yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. She's twisted in that manner. So she had a halfling like strapped to her body, a young halfling, as a way to make it difficult during battle, because obviously no one wants to harm this little halfling that she has. It's kind of like her protection in a very twisted way. So they had to battle her without like injuring the halfling. Unfortunately, at the end of the battle, they would have won, but she decided to pull a trigger and she basically cast Fireball on herself, hoping to take out Crixus with her. But he rolled a nat 20 and he got out and survived, but she did not, nor did the halfling as well. So that event itself was like burned into Crixus's mind. You know, he was like, this is what I need to fight for. Like, this mistreatment is terrible. And like, this will never happen again under my watch. And I was like, yeah, go you. Even though I'm also the bad guy. Yeah. I'm sorry it went this way. You know, but the thing that he didn't know is that all of the princesses are taught in high magic. So Visella, whenever, if she is killed by someone, a piece of her would become a part of them. So
whoever does the final blow.
Yeah, whoever did the final blow and like officially killed her off. So now, ever since then, he's had this voice of Visella in the back of his head, and she's always talking to him. Mm-hmm. And since everyone's connected through the mind, ever since the Rift adventure, like everyone can hear her. Mm-hmm. She's just so like mocking and cynical and cruel and just,
yeah, she's horrible.
Terrible.
And she's trying to convince Crixus this entire time to let her take control of his body.
Yes.
So that way she can come back, basically.
Right.
But she's offering him all these like lofty goals, you mm-hmm. know? She's like, if you let me take over for an hour, I can help get you into White Castle, which is where Empress Loria lives.
Notes. It is not actually called White Castle. That's called that by my players.
Yeah, that's what we call it.
It has a name, Isinora.
Nah.
But since it is white and made of glass, it is White Castle. Yeah.
Isinora is the Lindy term. We don't use that trash.
That's true. That's
fine. But yeah, so Visella is like constantly trying to convince Crixus to let her ride in his body. Mm-hmm. And he's come really, really close to letting it happen.
Yes.
She's given him some really good ultimatums. When we've been really desperate, you know, and he's let her do it a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah. He basically made a pact with her. So now he's taken levels of warlock,
right,
under her, which for the longest time he kept hidden from everybody and didn't tell anyone because he knew the reaction yeah. people would have. But yeah, he struck a deal with her because he was like, he felt like he, because of that battle, he was like, I didn't save anyone. Mm-hmm. I am weak and I need the power. And she offered it to him and he took it. But he had the idea in mind, like, it won't overwhelm me. I will control it. But of course, in her mind, which she shares with him, she's like, no, you're not. Yep. You're going to succumb to me.
Yep.
And I will be you. And you will be no more.
That's right.
So that has been a struggle for his character ever since then, for a good portion of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That's been pretty interesting to watch, but it also like helped his character resolve into fighting for his people. And he's just like, I don't care what it takes.
He has a weapon now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. He has something to use to help them so that what happened will never happen again.
Right.
And I was like, it was very harsh for everyone to go through that, but it got the job done.
Yeah, that was a terrible thing that we had to experience.
It was pretty bad.
The halfling blowing up on us.
This was early on, and that might have been a little much at the time. I admit that, but it happened, and that's what it is, and that's part of the story.
Another good choice that I want to talk about briefly, it's not like super important, but I think it is interesting. When we encountered the Riftling in those caverns, and he was the Vorpal weapon
yeah.
maker.
Yeah.
And again, Vorpal is almost like, it's a homebrew substance that Keisha made. It's made out of this like rift glass. Mm-hmm. It's like super strong and very magically potent. It's almost like silvered bullets to werewolves or like mithril or something.
Right.
And we encountered somebody that offered to make us weapons and armor. In exchange, we would agree not to destroy the rift. We were really excited about the opportunity to finally get some stronger weapons. We were told kind of vaguely by the DM that Vorpal was like one of the only substances that could defeat people from the rift. And it would give us a good chance against the Loria if we fought her, because she's like pretty OP.
Yep.
And it was basically like, like a free upgrade for us. And we could get whatever we wanted, weapons, armor, anything. And nobody decided to do it, because at this point in the story, which was a little over halfway, we were all very resolutely determined to destroy the rift.
Right.
But it was a huge argument because we were like, well, maybe I do want a sword. I mean, it'd be really cool.
It's really cool stuff, though. Like a whole suit of armor.
Right. But it was a binding contract.
Yep.
And there was no way out of it. So we ultimately decided it wasn't worth it. And we all wanted to kill the rift badly enough that we didn't want really cool, strong weapons and armor.
Yep. That's when I knew, like, okay, so that's the path.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I mean, he's suggesting that you just stop it from spreading because that's an option. No. Okay.
Yeah. At this point, we were not into that. But, you know, like up to that point, we'd been like, man, we need some better weapons. Like, we haven't really met anybody that's selling cool gear. And Keisha was like, okay, but there's a caveat.
Yeah.
So I just think that was another like interesting choice that we kind of pushed the story. You know, we all gave up having better items and weapons in exchange for following our goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Taking a step back to the two halflings again, when the party split up, Crixus went off and had that experience. At the same time, his brother, Bandar, the barbarian, was attacking a rift badger. And this was significant for him because that became his totem animal. He wanted to homebrew it to be a badger. And since this is a rift, I made it a rift badger. He killed it in a really epic battle, and he got the claws and the skull, and like bonded with the spirit of this rift badger because it recognized his strength in death. And so the two became one, which is funny that like at the same time with Crixus,
he became one with.
So that was huge for Bandar. And eventually it becomes huge for the whole party and the story when at some point you guys got attacked by a rift worm, which was a purple worm reskinned. Yeah. And that was a ridiculous battle because they got swallowed and they had to battle from the inside and get out of it. And Bandar technically died in that battle.
Right.
Which I didn't expect. He got absorbed, but the spirit of the badger came out and said, no, this is not your time. I will go in your place. They swapped and Bandar shot out of the worm.
Yep.
And the badger got absorbed. And that kind of broke his character for a while because I didn't realize how much of a connection they had. So that was really important to him. But quite a few sessions later, eventually he had a chance to bring back the badger. Because it was a spirit now. Mm-hmm. Because of the rift, there is no afterlife. There is just this weird in-between limbo. And the rift is like almost collecting these souls or preventing them from moving on for a specific purpose, of which you guys did not really know at the time. All Bandar knew was, my badger's down there. I'm getting him. Let's go.
Yep.
So you guys did. You went down there and literally fought death and went through trials with the harpies.
Yep.
Which I took that from Pullman's
The Golden Compass. Yeah, yeah, which I had just read whenever you introduced that.
Yeah.
Which was really fun.
So that was a cool little pull. But so yeah, they went down there. Bandar found his badger, dragged it back, did a huge battle again with the badger, but in spirit form.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost died
again.
From that, yeah. He prevailed with the help of his friends eventually. But because he forced a spirit back, that shouldn't have happened. So he like broke something.
Oh.
He broke
interesting
the in-between world and accidentally now has let loose all the spirits that have been collected and trapped. And contained safely, and now they are no longer contained.
Wow.
So now that's going to be a factor during the battle.
Crazy.
The final battle.
Yeah.
So that turned into being.
I'm like kind of learning some of this newly as we talk about it, because some of it has been kept from us.
Yep.
Up until this point. Yeah. So like kind of continuing with the plot here, we talked last time about how we were introduced to the Q'naw, and we kind of started going on individual quests to help them to kind of try and sway them to our side more.
Right.
Because the Kavaka didn't really like any of us, you know?
No.
Even though Redwall was a Loxodon, he was part of the Kavaka. They were all very independent and they all have their own opinions about things. But especially some of us, like the human and the halflings, that they just didn't care about. And so they definitely didn't want to be allies. So we had to start going on individual kind of like fetch quests for them. And they had all their own issues and stuff. But we really had to like bond the Q'naw together. And one of the big issues is one of the NPCs we met, Snow, mm-hmm. which is actually one of Keech's old characters.
Yep.
is a snow leopard tabaxi who was, we had hoped would be the female representative for the Q'naw.
Right.
But she went on her own quest with one of our other players who ended up stopped playing, but yeah. they went back to the Rift to start collecting flowers, which were supposed to be the cure to the Rift Plague, which right. we talked about in the first episode. But the Rift Plague was disproportionately affecting Loxodons, mm-hmm. and they were almost coming to extinction. So that was kind of a big thing where she disappeared, and we were trying to decide if we wanted to search for her. We had started being introduced to the Rift Brotherhood, mm-hmm. which are a faction that are everybody's connected to the Rift that was born in there. And the Rift Brotherhood are somehow able to not be in the Rift and have traveled to kind of spread the gospel of the Rift, if you will.
Right. It's the way to go now.
Right. And they've been recruiting people, but recruiting people means literally melding them into the Rift, where you become body, soul, and mind a part of it.
Right.
So that became kind of a new thing for us, is they were very actively trying to incorporate two of our characters into their fold. And we met more people there, and we were kind of trying to push them away, but they were slowly taking over both the North and the South for their own purposes. Mm-hmm. So we were actively fighting against them to sway people to be our allies on either side. And it kind of started to become this very convoluted, like, government.
Yeah.
Government, like, dance, I guess you could say.
Because they were trying to, when you first met the Q'naw, they were trying to get seats on there, mm-hmm. the Rift Brotherhood.
Right. Yep, they were trying to be part of it, and we shut that down.
Yes.
But they came really close to recruiting us.
Yeah, actually, that's right. They invited you to, like, this little gathering, a ball, really. Mm-hmm. I remember that. And they were trying to convince you, like, this is the way. Like, you've seen personally how terrible you all treat one another, like the Elendi versus the Kavaka versus elves and halflings, and isn't it terrible?
Yeah.
Don't you all want peace? And you guys were like, yeah. And they were like, okay, join us. And you were like, oh, no. It was so close.
Mm-hmm.
So close.
And it was after like learning about them and talking to them more that we started to get a bad taste in our mouths. And I think that was the moment where we all kind of decided that we didn't like the Rift.
Right.
Like the Brotherhood is the reason that we were more against the Rift than we were. Because I think up until that point, we still weren't sure, because we had all had different experiences in the Abyss. I mean, in the Chasm, where we had felt either that it was benevolent or that it was friendly, and we weren't sure what we wanted to do. And then after talking to the Rift and seeing how strongly they were pushing to kind of like take over everything, we were like, nah, we're good.
Yeah,
actually, I'm fine.
You're a little radical.
And so then we got another enemy out of that.
Right.
And that's kind of what led to some of the Q'naw dying and disappearing and us being able to replace them. And that was a whole thing. But that was kind of like the meat of like the center part of our whole story here. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of kind of unravel each quest. And we started learning about certain Kavaka that needed help in some way that we went to go help. And I'm sure a lot of that fell through. Like, we had a lot of chances to save people that we just didn't ever go for.
There was just so many things that it was kind of one of those things where I had a lot going on and they had to choose like between A, B, and C, what one are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Because the other two are going to happen simultaneously. So you chose B. Okay, well, A and C, I'm going to roll silently to see how that resolved without you there, you know? I mean, in a way, I'm sure it might have been a little frustrating to be like, oh, God, there's so many. We want to do them all, but we can't do them all. But at the same time, it's like, it's a lot. And I know that. So to kind of help with that, choose what's important to you mm-hmm. and focus on that.
Yeah.
Ignore the rest. The rest just will happen.
We finally did. But, you know, I mean, you don't know. But Keisha makes it very personal. So like each quest that she introduced is like, if you don't save this kitten, it's going to perish in a fire and it's going to be all your fault, you know. But at the same time, there's like a beached whale that you'd better save. So which one are you going to save first? But they're both going to die. It's very dramatic.
Yeah.
So it's very stressful for us to make these decisions. And this was kind of like where everything was swirling into the center, where all of the choices were swirling together, and whichever thread we picked was going to be the one that led us to where we are now.
Exactly.
And that's what happened.
Yep.
And we were playing a line at this point, and eventually Keisha actually wrote like a quest log for us, which was super helpful.
There was so much.
Because she kept introducing things like, well, this Q-Na needs help with this, and you need to go visit your Loxodon tribe and check in with them because they're all dying, and you need to find a cure to the Rift Plague and blah, blah, blah. So that was very helpful to have kind of like a comprehensive list, but also knowing we couldn't do them all.
And yeah, again, you guys had many times discussions on like, okay, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What's important? What matters less than the rest?
Exactly.
Like, what can we live with? This many people dying versus this many? I mean,
yeah.
Potentially. And yeah, it again, like you guys chose what you wanted to do. And that's how the story happened, because you went down those paths and mm-hmm. instead of the others. Another side story of what affected not only just the PC, but also like the plot itself was, so our Loxodon, Red Wool, so the Loxodon in general are dying. Like I made it clear at the start of the campaign, there are literally like less than 1,000 mm-hmm. that exist, period, on this world
yeah.
total. And so he knew his people were dying. So he had to find a way to help them. And they encountered a small portion of Loxodon that are, in a sense, cursed, where they can only survive by drinking the blood of their own kind or feasting upon their own kind.
Right.
And that was through a past event where they were tricked into eating this root that whatever that root is mixed with, whatever blood that root is mixed with, the drinker is forced to have to use that as their sustenance from now on.
Yes.
He had to go and deal with that because they were trying to be like, hey, this is the way. Like, we should all be like this. Not against our own people, but if we mix the root with the blood of our enemies, you know, like, that's mm-hmm. got to be helpful, right? And you guys were like, well, no, obviously.
Well, it's important to note, too, that the Loxodon were the most affected by this Rift Plague.
Yes.
Heavily. They were getting wiped out more than any other race. And we still don't know why that they were affected so badly.
Right.
And the one tribe that was essentially resorting to cannibalism were the only ones that weren't affected by the plague.
They're completely immune
right.
because of the root.
So it became, should we let the Loxodons become cannibals and eat their dead, mm-hmm. maybe, you know?
Right.
So that way they can still live?
Because that was their way of getting around it, because obviously the tribe, the Bloodbane tribe, which is the ones that are affected by this, refused to eat their own, but they would go to a graveyard and feast on those as little as possible to be enough for them to continue going.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, obviously there are hundreds of thousands of graves because we're a dying race. So we have plenty of food for a while at least.
Yeah.
Like, and we're completely immune to the plague. So what do you think is worse? Like watching your people slowly die out from a plague or being near immortal at the sacrifice of eating your buddy, but, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a huge decision. But he ultimately said no, and even went so far as to actually have those guys as a somewhat ally.
Mm-hmm.
So that changed the course of his people.
Yeah. I mean, he became a leader of his tribe mm-hmm. because of that. And, you know, he was already a Cunha representative. But, yeah, he basically became like a sultan or something of the Loxodon. So,
basically, yeah.
And he united three independent tribes that were fighting against each other with that decision.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was pretty important, too.
Yep.
And then we essentially got the Loxodon as allies that way.
Right. Yeah. And it's all of these little pieces have been like building up to this ultimate battle where I've been mentally keeping track of all of this. Like, okay, so you saved this many of the Loxodon. So you're going to have that much more on your side. Like, you don't have the blood banes against you. So you have that many less of enemies. I definitely try to make sure that your personal quests ultimately did affect like the total outcome of this entire story. Mm-hmm. They weren't just like, oh, I did this, now I feel good and I can move on with you guys, you know? Like, no, it actually, not only did it help you in your own personal way, it's going to help all in the end, so.
Yeah, and then that was kind of really like, that's where we started to actually see the world from every angle of it. Mm-hmm. And we'd spend most of our time in the north at this point, but we had had plans to go to the south and infiltrate White Castle.
Yeah.
and deal with the elves. We actually never did that. But we had this major idea in mind the whole time of like going, I guess we did a little, but we, you know, we were supposed to go and try and kill some elves and get some information and stuff and talk to the humans, which we never really did. And we ended up in the north a lot, and it affected a lot of stuff that way.
Yeah.
And we just never really saw what was going on in the south that whole time. One more major event I wanted to talk about is Victor the Void.
Oh, no.
Which we've already said the story before. It's hilarious. I highly recommend you listen to it.
Yeah.
What
episode was that?
I don't know.
One of our previous episodes. Listen to them all to find it.
Probably one of the like homebrew items or something. Anyways, so Victor the Void was something that we met kind of on the beginning of the tail end of the story.
Yeah.
We were at this point. At this point in the story, we are trying to gather as many allies as we can, and we have an unforeseen time limit. So every decision we make is countered with a hidden decision from the DM.
Yes.
That is ultimately leading up to this battle that we're about to do. And we have so many, basically, slots for allies that we have to fill and so little time to fill them. And at this point, we have definite allies, kind of enemies, and definite enemies. And we're trying to sway those in the middle to our cause. And some of them are pretty indifferent, like they just don't care either way. And some of them want nothing to do with the fight at all. And so one of those people are the Tritons, who just don't care about any of the land dwellers at all. The rift doesn't affect them, et cetera, et cetera. And we went into their domain to try to convince them that we needed their help. Because, again, at this point, we were trying to not only get allies, we were trying to sway people from the Elendi side to our side to have stronger allies and to weaken their system. And we met the Void, which again is a great story, but he was essentially eating the mother turtle that this entire world rests on. And we had agreed to contain it if the Tritons would come fight for us. And instead of this crazy battle that Keisha had planned, which sounded really ridiculous and awesome,
we'll never know.
We befriended the Void and named him Victor.
Yeah.
And we gave him a purpose and a meaning in life. And
friendship.
He was renewed. And that was huge because I think the way it was set up, at least from my perspective, is that the Tritons were basically unwinnable. They were never going to side with us. Maybe they weren't going to side with the Elendi either, but they just did not give a fuck. Everything we tried up to that point had failed.
So I will also side note that the Triton Prince, who's the leader of the Tritons right now, was engaged to Zayla.
Oh, yeah.
And while they were engaged, that is when our player decided to have a fun night with Zayla. And the Triton Prince found out and was not too happy about it.
Yeah, he didn't like us.
Not at all.
And then Zayla had Bandar's children.
And then, yeah, and she never had children with the Triton Prince. And then we killed Zayla. And then you killed Zayla.
Yeah.
And then you guys pretty much replaced like 80% of the Cuna with your own people. And the Triton Prince was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so like I said, he was pretty much never going to side with us.
He was not, yeah.
He was not happy until we befriended Victor. And Victor agreed to stop swallowing the mother turtle. And he is actually now one of our allies.
Yep.
Which is huge.
Yep.
And much to Keisha's dismay.
Yep.
He is, like I said, a void. He's a sentient void. You know, we also got the Tritons on our side, plus a void, which is going to be huge. But we kind of sacrificed an event to do this.
Yes.
This was kind of at the point where we were down to like three choices. Who was going to be our allies and what quests were we going to pursue to get them? And this was the one that we argued over a lot.
Yeah.
And decided to try for the Tritons because they were so difficult. They were so unknowable in what side they were going to choose. And we ended up with the Void. So I think that was huge for us. And also one final thing that I think really helped us along in the story was drawing from the deck of many things.
Yeah.
It gave us a lot of power. It also gave us a lot of bullshit that we had to deal with. And we kind of wasted time dealing with it.
Yep.
But that was a pretty, all of the things that came out of the deck of many things were pivotal to our story.
Yeah.
So.
Especially the floating castle that just like goes wherever you want.
Yes. That's very convenient for us.
Your home base.
But I think the biggest thing from the deck is when an NPC, Oliver, who at the time was like kind of friendly with us. He was a whisperer. We were paying him for rumors. He was like always popping up into our castle, living there for free without permission, basically.
He would also like randomly appear in like your cloak.
Yeah.
Or I hated him. Something like that. It was pretty great.
He was creepy. And he knows everything about what's going on in Rethledon. So he drew from the deck and it was a whole thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He drew, I don't remember
The card.
But basically, you ask a question and it is answered completely and thoroughly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know everything about whatever that question is. And when he was your friend at the time, he gave you the card to use because he felt like he didn't need it because he was like, well, I'm a whisperer. I know everything.
But yeah. Then
you pissed him off.
Right. So we pissed him off. He wasn't our friend anymore. And he basically opened like a rift portal in our backyard and was making the rift grow.
I forgot about that.
In our backyard.
Your first home base.
Right. And we were nowhere near the rift. And after he opened this portal, the rift just kept spreading and eventually devoured our house and some of our favorite people. That was fun. And now Oliver is an enemy? Question mark. So
he hasn't shown up for a while.
I know. he was not happy after that incident. No, but that was a pretty important thing because all of a sudden the rift wasn't just expanding from that one point.
From the chasm.
He had opened a separate point and it was spreading pretty quickly into Rethledon.
And then you did end up using that card though.
Mm-hmm.
And at that the was end, a big recently. Revelation. Yeah. Which we'll probably discuss in our final segment of our homebrew series for the Rift, because that basically leads up to the end of this campaign.
It does.
So, yeah, those were a lot of the main events that happened that really like propelled the story even further towards the end that we're going into. I don't know if we really missed any. Well, I guess a major one for your character specifically, was rescuing Mistra.
Oh, yeah.
You found out that she is alive, barely, and you initially went on your own because everybody else in the group went off to do something else. And you were like, no, I'm going to go rescue Mistra. You do your little thing that I don't care about and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily,
the rest of the group eventually joined you, it was really difficult for you guys because yes. there was a creature that was like a guardian, obviously trying to make sure that nobody took Mistra. And you found out that Mistra was basically food for the Rift itself, or the one, the mother, the Rift mother, she's eventually called, was devouring Mistra slowly but surely, because Mistra, being the goddess of magic, is obviously pure magic. And that was the source for the Rift to live and grow. And as it was feeding off Mistra these past 20 years, it's been spreading like quickly and wildly. Mm-hmm. So you guys managed to, through a very, very difficult battle, I will repeat, like seriously, they didn't even, they got the monster to like maybe half health. It was crazy. But you also had the goal of trying to get Mistra out of there because she was on the verge of death. And it was like a whole set up where there were two false Mistras there. You guys didn't know which one was the real one, and you just kind of had to guess.
I killed one.
You killed one of them, and you were like, I hope that's not the real one. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
That was so stressful.
And I mean, ultimately, you guys did get the real one by, like, kind of pure luck, really. Mm-hmm. But you got her out of there, and you alerted the Rift Brotherhood, really, that you did that in the first place.
Yeah.
Which will factor into the battle once we get to that point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you managed to actually save her and prove that she was real.
Yep.
So, which leads into so many other parts of the story. She revealed the truth of like why the North and the South are like so different, why they're so against each other, why their histories don't line up. There's so many inconsistencies. And why the plague affects one more than the other, and like all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely very important.
Yeah, and that was towards the beginning of the end. And we can discuss more of that, obviously, for like the next episode, which leads up to the actual ultimate end of this campaign. That was a huge one, especially for your character.
Yes, it was. I mean, that was my whole goal up until this point.
Yep.
You know? And we learned a lot of important information about how to end the Rift. Mm-hmm. And having Mistra on our side is huge. Yeah. Huge. Because we already had some pretty powerful allies, but having a literal goddess of magic to help us is very important. So
that's going to change a whole thing. Because she offered to give you guys a gift, mm-hmm. but that would have drained her power. And you guys debated for a very long time on whether or not to receive that really gracious gift.
Yes.
Or save her for the battle.
Right. And
ultimately, she's saved for the battle. So we'll see what she ends up doing. Mm-hmm. But so that's basically what we are up to right now in the campaign, minus a couple of other things. But yeah, we are, for our next segment, it's probably going to be our last for the Rift campaign.
Yeah.
Series, unless if we end up wanting to do one to say this is how it actually ended, these were our last few sessions, because it's going to be a few more. But either way, hope you enjoyed that. That was a bit more about the story progression and like the personal progression of the characters, deeper into the lore of this homebrew campaign that kind of all of us really put together.
Yeah, and a little bit deeper look into some of the major events that shifted our story so dramatically.
Yeah.
And why.
Yeah.
And also just some ridiculous shit that happened to us.
There's so much. Obviously, there's even more that we could say, but you know how it goes. You all know how it goes if you play D&D at all. Anyway, we'll end it here for now. Actually, for us right now recording, tomorrow is going to be the beginning of our end mm-hmm. of the campaign.
The first of the battle.
Yep, the very beginning of it.
I'm looking forward to it.
So we'll see how that goes. That's been stressful, but also like fun trying to put together. So I'm curious to see.
What was fun for us is the last couple weeks while Keisha needed time to prepare, we had another player DMing just like a little side story for us. But we were basically just grinding and fighting huge level monsters, kind of like in a pocket dimension where nobody can die.
Yep.
So we leveled up, but it was fun to just kind of like grind and like just fight.
It just kind of
fight, 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 and then just like get a bunch of experience. So That's what we've been doing up until this point, which is going to start the battle.
Yeah. And that's going to be a whole thing. Yep. And hopefully you guys will get to hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it for this portion. Thanks for listening in. Please check out more of our episodes. We have quite a few put up at this point. Stay tuned for more. We're going to wrap up this homebrew series. We might dabble into a little bit of our other homebrew that we're doing as well. And then get back into just general D&D stuff. Hopefully more live play eventually coming your way. Stay tuned. We got more stuff coming.
Right. So you can find us on Instagram, Potions and Potpourri. You can email us at potionsandpotpourri@gmail.com. And we still have a survey up that we would love to get any feedback from. It's very short. Just what you like, what you don't like. Scale 1 through 5. How you feel about the show. Small section to write your own input. What you'd like to hear more of. If you like us or not, you know, whatever. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from you on social or any other way. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Kayla.
And Keisha. Thanks again, guys. And we will catch you later on the next episode.
Goodbye.
Bye.